Graff had Dymac and Dap in his makeshift office in the Battle Room Bridge when Bean came. It was the usual argument between Dymac and Dap, that is, it was about nothing, some trivial question of one violating some minor protocol or other, which escalated quickly into a flurry of formal complaints. Just another skirmish in their rivalry, as Dap and Dymac tried to gain some advantage for their protégés, Ender and Bean, while at the same time trying to keep Graff from putting them in the physical danger that both saw looming. When the knock came at the door, voices had been raised for some time, and because the knock was not loud, it occurred to Graff to wonder what might have been overheard. Had names been mentioned? Yes, both Bean and Ender, and also Bonzo. Had a Shield's name come up? No. He had just been referred to as another irresponsible decision endangering the future of the human race, all because of some insane theory about games being one thing and genuine life and death struggles being another, completely unproven and unprovable except in the blood of some child. That was Dap, who had a tendency to wax eloquent. Graff, of course, was already sick at heart because he agreed with both teachers, not only in their arguments against each other, but also in their arguments against his own policy. Bean was demonstrably the better candidate on all tests. Ender was just as demonstrably the better candidate based on his performance in actual leadership situations. And Graff was being irresponsible to expose both boys to physical danger. But in both cases, the child had serious doubts about his own courage. Ender had his long history of submission to his older brother Peter, and the mind game had shown that in Ender's unconscious, Peter was linked to the buggers. Graff knew that Ender had the courage to strike without restraint when the time came for it, that he could stand alone against an enemy without anyone to help him, and destroy the one who would destroy him. But Ender didn't know it, and he had to know. Bean, for his part, had shown physical symptoms of panic before his first battle, and while he ended up performing well, Graff didn't need any psychological tests to tell him that the doubt was there. The only difference was, in Bean's case, Graff shared his doubt. There was no proof that Bean would strike. Self-doubt was the one thing that neither candidate could afford to have. Against an enemy that did not hesitate, that could not hesitate, there could be no pause for reflection. The boys had to face their worst fears, knowing that no one would intervene to help. They had to know that when failure would be fatal, they would not fail. They had to pass the test and know that they had passed it, and both boys were so perceptive that the danger could not be faked. It had to be real. Exposing them to that risk was utterly irresponsible of Graff, yet he knew that it would be just as irresponsible not to. If Graff played it safe, no one would blame him if in the actual war Ender or Bean failed. That would be small consolation, though, given the consequences of failure. Whichever way he guessed, if he was wrong, everybody on Earth might pay the ultimate price. The only thing that made it possible was that if either of them was killed or damaged physically or mentally, the other was still there to carry on as the sole remaining candidate. If both failed, what then? There were many bright children, but none who were that much better than commanders already in place who had graduated from battle school many years ago. Somebody has to roll the dice. Mine are the hands that hold those dice. I'm not a bureaucrat, placing my career above the larger purpose I was put here to serve. I will not put the dice in someone else's hands, or pretend that I don't have the choice I have. For now, all Graff could do was listen to both Dap and Dymac, ignore their bureaucratic attacks and maneuvers against him, and try to keep them from each other's throats in their vicarious rivalry. That small knock at the door, Graff knew before the door opened who it would be. If he had heard the argument, Bean gave no sign, but then that was Bean's specialty, giving no sign. Only Ender managed to be more secretive, and he, at least, had played the mind game long enough to give the teachers a map of his psyche. "Sir," said Bean. "Come in, Bean. Come in, Julian Delphiki, longed-for child of good and loving parents. Come in, kidnapped child, hostage of fate. Come and talk to the fates who are playing such clever little games with your life." "I can wait," said Bean. "Captain Dapp and Captain Dymack can hear what you have to say, can't they?" asked Graff.
"If you say so, sir. It's not a secret. I would like to have access to station supplies."
"Denied."
"That's not acceptable, sir."
Graff saw how both Dapp and Dymack glanced at him, amused at the audacity of the boy. "Why do you think so?"
"Short notice. Games every day, soldiers exhausted and yet still being pressured to perform in class. Fine. Ender's dealing with it, and so are we. But the only possible reason you could be doing this is to test our resourcefulness. So I want some resources."
"I don't remember your being commander of Dragon Army," said Graff. "I'll listen to a requisition for specific equipment from your commander."
"Not possible," said Bean. "He doesn't have time to waste on foolish bureaucratic procedures."
Foolish bureaucratic procedures. Graff had used that exact phrase in the argument just a few minutes ago, but Graff's voice had not been raised. How long had Bean been listening outside the door? Graff cursed himself silently. He had moved his office up here specifically because he knew Bean was a sneak and a spy, gathering intelligence however he could. And then he didn't even post a guard to stop the boy from simply walking up and listening at the door.